believe assault is an act, not an adjective. Your safety is not just on the gun, it is the gun. Freedom is a fundamental human right. Welcome to your show, Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes. Your safety is your responsibility, not the government's, not anybody else's. Be a citizen, not a subject. Better yet, be a listener. Because it's an inalienable right, not a privilege. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is live, right now. Call 1-800-313-9443.
Welcome to the show, everybody. Good morning. I'm your host, Bill Carnes. You're listening to 2A Radio. Yesterday, I was complaining about some garbage to do with my laptop computer, my notebook, the one that I used, you know, 95% of the time. As it turns out, it wasn't any virus at all. It turns out that a particular system file dealing with the video card went goofy. And I don't get it. I mean, it's a notebook computer. It's not like I opened the thing up and changed a bunch of stuff out. It just stopped working. So I was able to find a different version of that file and copy it into a couple places. And now it's working kind of. My video, my screen is not to the resolution it once was. I've got to delve into this a little bit further. I don't quite get that. Those of you who are real computer techies, tell me what this is all about. It's nv4_mini.sys, M-I-N-I. Tell me what this is all about. Because I looked at all the different places where that happened to be on my computer, and in fact, none of them had been rewritten through some malicious program or some update. Just all of a sudden, it decided not to work anymore. Unreal. Very goofy stuff. I don't quite get it. I just don't. Supreme Court refused to hear a controversial case dealing with the Pledge of Allegiance. Listen to this. The Supreme Court announced just yesterday that it will not hear arguments in a case involving a Florida teenager who says he was humiliated by his teacher and sent to the principal's office for refusing to stand and recite the Pledge of Allegiance. Cameron Frazier says he was singled out by his math teacher when he refused to participate in the pledge. Most, if not all, states have laws requiring public schools to administer the 31-word oath daily. Florida's law allows for students to remain silent for the pledge, but only with their prior parental consent. Even with that permission, students are required to stand with their classmates. Okay, that's reasonable enough. You don't have to say it. I mean, quite honestly, the Pledge of Allegiance was put together by somebody who had very socialistic undertones. I shouldn't even say undertones, overtones. And, you know, it is a little odd, but patriotic in some areas, kind of socialist in another area. It's a very, it's kind of a quandary for me, this whole Pledge of Allegiance thing. However, to stand up and show a little bit of respect, that's fine. At least stand up and not look like a jackass. Okay, I am cool with that rule. This kid didn't do that. Frazier, who was in the 11th grade at the time of the incident, so he's a high school junior, argued that the law denied his constitutional right to free expression by overriding his conscience and compelling his participation in the pledge. Now, I have a copy of the First Amendment here, and the right to free expression is not in there. Now, a lot of people use the First Amendment for that. That's fine. Florida's Department of Education defends the law and the ruling of a lower appellate court that concluded the law properly allows for parental consent in affairs of their children. The state contends that law appropriately balances the interests of parents, children, and school administrators who need to maintain an orderly learning environment. Justices, as is custom, announced no reason for denying the case. They just didn't hear it. That's fine. I'm good with this. It's an interesting story. It has to do with, you know, constitutional type stuff, the freedom of being able to do whatever the hell it is that you think you should be able to do as an American. And, you know, I agree with that ruling. I agree with them not hearing the case. It seems like it was something that was blown out. More to come after the break. Stay tuned. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, right here on 2A Radio.
Rule 1, assume it's loaded. Rule 2, Don't point it at anything you're not willing to destroy. Rule 3. Listen to the 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes. 1-800-313-9443.
I want to take just a moment to talk about stupid, irrelevant people. Namely, it's James Earl Carter Jr., better known as Jimmy Carter, the 39th president who served from 1977 to 1981 and was really kind of the echelon of proving that the nation could run on its own for as many as 4 years without any true defined leadership. The same guy that gave away the Panama Canal. Okay? Not really a guy that goes down in history for anything he did as president, more so what he's done after being president. Here is a clip that he is speaking about racism dealing with de facto President Obama. Then, the second part of this clip is him being interviewed by someone regarding those statements and him denying some of those statements. Say, go back and read the transcript. Then we hear what he has to say again. It's a couple minutes long. Listen to this.
I think an overwhelming portion of the intensely demonstrated animosity toward President Barack Obama is based on the fact that he is a black man, that he's African American. I live in the South, and I've seen the South come a long way, and I've seen the rest of the country that shared the South's attitude toward minority groups at that time, particularly African Americans. That racism inclination still exists, and I think it's bubbled up to the surface because of a belief among many white people, not just in the South but around the country, that African Americans are not qualified to lead this great country. It's an abominable circumstance and grieves me and concerns me very deeply.
President Carter in Atlanta today, he went on to say that because of President Obama's personal qualities, he will be able to, quote, triumph over the racist attitude that is the basis for the negative environment that we see so vividly demonstrated in public affairs in recent days, end of quote.
Mr. President, let me ask you first domestically. You made some remarks recently about how you felt about the protesters that were protesting against President Obama. You said overall you thought the protesters were upset that there was a black president, that there was racism involved. You said that many people...
By the way, that's not what I said.
Okay.
I said those on the fringe element that had vituperative personal attacks on President Obama. Those were the ones that I included, but I recognize...
Your first remarks were that overall...
No, it wasn't. If you read the remarks carefully, you'll see that that's not what I said. I said those that had a personal vituperative attack on President Obama as a person, that was tinged with racism. But I recognize that people who disagree with him on health care or environment and things like that, that vast majority of those are not tinged by racism.
So you think they were taken out of context? You didn't mean that most of those protesters out there
were racist? I
meant
exactly what I said. That what I actually said, if you look at this transcript, is just what I just repeated to you. I think an overwhelming portion of the intensely demonstrated animosity toward President Barack Obama is based on the fact that he is a black man.
He says overwhelming.
That he's African American. I live in the South, and I've seen the South come a long way, and I've seen the rest of the country that shared the South's attitude toward minority groups at that time, particularly African Americans. That racism inclination still exists.
Do you hear the word pertuitive
anywhere?
I think
it's bubbled up to the surface because of a belief among many white people, not just in the South, but around the country, that African Americans are not qualified to lead this great country. It's an abominable circumstance and grieves me and concerns me very deeply.
At no time at all did he actually use the word pertuitive in his actual speech, only in his explanation of what he meant to say. An absolutely insistence on, that's not what I said, this is what I said. Now keep in mind, I didn't take one speech and then apply it to a different interview. This is the speech that was being spoken about. Right? So he just sat there in line. What an ineffective human being this piece of garbage Jimmy Carter is. What a scumbag to actually not stand behind his own words. There's a recording, there's a transcript. And you're going to sit there in an interview and insist you said something different when there's actual proof of what you said, when you said it, and how you came across with it? It's not just a recording, Jimmy. It's a video recording showing you. That's what I got it off of. Just go away. This is the same guy that's going and glad-handing every dictator in the world. Why? Because that's the way he believes things should go. I just don't understand why stupid people can't just go away. I mean, this guy was born in 1924. He's got to be like 173 years old. At least he looks that old. Can't you just go retire? Can't you just let dust fall upon yourself and go do something else that's not in the public eye and making yourself look worse? I mean, my God, for somebody who's trying to write their own ticket in the history books, you're writing a very, very poor story. Very poor story. Here's something else out of the South. And it's funny because Jimmy Carter says, you know, the South has come a long way. That's right, because they're not electing nearly as many Democrats as they used to back in your day. They have come a long way. You showed them personally, Jimmy, the error of their ways. Coming out of Alabama, a former judge faces 20 years in prison after an inmate sex scandal. Listen to this, out of Montgomery. The trial of a former political darling accused of having sex with inmates in exchange for favors began yesterday. Herman Thomas, a black judge, was a rising star in Alabama politics, a Democrat who kept getting elected in a county overwhelmingly white and increasingly Republican. Then his career on the bench collapsed under allegations that he was bringing inmates into his office, spanking them with a paddle. An indictment later accused him of having sex with male inmates in exchange for leniency. He faces trial on charges of sodomy, kidnapping, sex abuse, extortion, assault, and ethics violations that involved oral and anal sex as well as the spankings. If convicted of the most serious charges, sodomy and kidnapping, he faces from 20 years to life in prison. The cases shocked Thomas's friends and former colleagues. Here's a quote, "I've always had the highest regard for him. The allegations were a complete surprise to me and everyone else who knew him," said Bob Eddington, a prominent Mobile, Alabama attorney and former Democratic state senator. The oldest incident in the charges dates to 1999, the first year he sat as a circuit court judge. The first public claim came against Thomas when it surfaced in lawsuits filed by an inmate in 2001 in Mobile Court, and Mobile Circuit Court, and in federal court that he claimed the judge offered, that claimed the judge offered to help the man with his case in return for sex. Both lawsuits were dismissed, and Thomas's reputation remained unblemished until now. Now, this is a judge doing this. What is it that we have to put up with in this world? Okay, here's another one based on a police officer. Okay, hold on a second. Let me pull this up on my notes here. A cop's gun used in 5 shootings, it says. A Waterbury cop turned himself in last Wednesday on charges that he stockpiled explosives out of his Westville home and that several of his guns turned up in criminals' hands on New Haven streets. This comes out of Connecticut. Let's see. David Setzer, 41, Sergeant David Setzer, 41, of the Waterbury Police Department, turned himself in to New Haven Police Headquarters around 1:30 p.m. Wednesday. Setzer was charged with 7 counts of illegal transfer or sale of a firearm and 1 count each of manufacturing a bomb, illegal possession of explosives, illegal possession of an assault weapon, risk of injury to a minor, and illegal possession of fireworks. He was released after posting $50,000 bond and is due in court Thursday. Thursday is in like 2 days from now. Cops served a search warrant on his home on August 17th, according to Waterbury Police Lieutenant Chris Corbett. The bomb, fireworks, and risk of injury to a minor charge from that, this stemmed from that raid. The raid was the third time in 2 months that cops have found illegal weapons stockpiled in a quiet middle-class New Haven home. Other charges stem from 7 missing guns registered to Setzer, at least 2 of which were recovered at crime scenes. All guns were privately owned. Setzer never made a stolen gun report and could not explain where his guns were or how they ended up in the hands of convicted felons. Guy was an 18-year Waterbury Police Force veteran. We're having to deal with this from a cop. Okay, first story is about a judge. Now we're talking about a cop. When does all of this end? I realize we're dealing with the human race. People have issues. But when we have people that are supposed to be in some position of authority or decision-making ability or something, and they can't handle their own private business above and above board, what the hell are we doing? How are we finding these people? And how are we not realizing that this sort of thing is going on? This is the sort of thing that's totally going to damn this nation into oblivion. Absolute damn it into oblivion. If oblivion. If we cannot get a rein on these sorts of things, it's unreal. Stay tuned. There's plenty more coming at you after the break. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, right here on 2A Radio.
Have the alcohol and tobacco. Leave the firearms to us. Right now, live, the 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes.
One of the things that goes on in this country when it comes to certain rights, especially gun rights, is when different states, counties, cities, wherever it is, enact some form of a statute that forces people to have to go spend money and get a license in order to even purchase a gun. They have to be licensed to exercise a right, which is a real problem. That flies in the face of what a right is, shall not be infringed. A right is a right. You can't regulate it. You can't force people to apply for it, to exercise it, and you can't make people pay money for it. So the Massachusetts Supreme Court is going to hear a challenge to the state's gun laws brought by a local defense attorney. The Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court is expected to decide whether a state law that requires residents to apply for gun licenses with their local police departments is unconstitutional. The challenge is being brought before the court by Paul W. Patton, a Fall River, Massachusetts defense attorney who is representing Nathaniel DePina, 19, of New Bedford, who was serving a 2-year jail sentence after being convicted last year of illegally carrying a firearm. Patton is appealing DePina's conviction on the grounds that the state gun licensing statute is vague and overbroad. It's inconsistent in application and violates an enumerated fundamental right protected by the Second Amendment. This is not just about guns. To me, this is a case about the U.S. Constitution, said Patton, who will argue the case November 5th before the Supreme Judicial Court. The Commonwealth has unabridged discretion to decide who is a suitable person to receive a gun license and what conditions that license can have, said Patton. Rather than going through the appellate courts, Patton appealed directly to the Supreme Judicial Court, saying that DePina's case concerned basic constitutional rights that required a final determination by the state's highest court. So he wasn't just going to screw around. He was going to go directly to the court that would eventually hear this anyhow. And I have to applaud him. Now, a guy gets busted for carrying a gun because he doesn't have a license to carry a gun. Well, where did we go wrong? Well, we had to start licensing people to exercise a right. There's been a huge movement for years over this when it comes to driving a car for your own personal use. You know, the roads and highways are put out there for common use of transportation for people to use at their leisure, at their discretion. Once you start using it for commercial purposes, that is when the state can get involved and start regulating that through commerce, interstate commerce, things such as that. But to actually use it for somebody like you or me, just, you know, to go wherever we're going to go, go to work, go to the grocery store, go to school, take the kids to, you know, go play baseball or soccer or whatever they're going to play. That, for them to require that you're licensed and your vehicle's licensed, all of that stuff right there really gets in the way of your freedom to be able to move about freely. And several state courts have come around and said, yeah, you know, you can't require people to do this. But have you seen any DMVs close up shop and say, we're just going to deal with the commercial aspect now? No, you haven't. Because people expect to be able to do this. There are so many dozens and dozens, probably hundreds of things that cities, municipalities, counties, states, and the federal government do that are not legal, that require us to take time and money and inconvenience, because they're in the business of, all it is another form of taxation. Any way that any government entity can gain money from the populace that it's supposed to serve is simply just another form of taxation. That's really all it is. Whether they get it through licensing fees or writing you a ticket or charging you some sort of sales tax, or it's all just another form of taxation to get what you've got. So in Massachusetts, you've got to go get this gun card. I'm allowed to go buy a gun. Same thing in Illinois. I believe they have the same thing in New York. They have the same thing in California. They require you to go out, spend money, in some cases take some sort of a class in order to exercise a right. Guys, why are we allowing these things to get through? Why are we allowing them to stay on the books if they got through some time ago? This is the time to start fighting and find people to get into office that will change these things. I am a big fan of reelect no one. Nobody. Everyone who gets into office and stays there long enough will find themselves being corrupted. Even long-term senators or the first-time guy on the county commission, they will find their ability to perform their job corrupted by special interests, people with money, people trying to sway favoritism, or otherwise might have some dirt on them that they don't want to get out. That's why I'm a big fan of reelect no one. Find people who will represent you properly for the term that's available and get them in office. Defeat this sort of stuff. More after the break. Stay tuned. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, on 2A Radio.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
With Bill Carnes, 1-800-313-9443.
Let's talk for a moment, if we could, about interstate commerce. What interstate commerce is, if you do business in one state with someone in another state, that's called interstate commerce. The Constitution gives the federal government the authority to regulate interstate commerce. However, it does not, by any means, give the federal government the authority to regulate commerce within a state. I'll give you an example. My father owned a print shop. all of his customers were within the state of Nevada. There was no federal regulation. If he was selling printing all over the country, well, then they would have been able to go in there if they wanted to pass some sort of law and then create some sort of a body or assign some sort of a body regulatory authority. That's what happens with the trucking industry. That's what happens with the airline industry. Okay, because these trucks are going to haul cargo from, you know, one state through several others into another state. Or you're going to get on an aircraft, a commercial aircraft in one state, land in another state. So there are regulatory authorities. Both of those, we'll see, there's Department of Transportation that deals with those. The Federal Aviation Administration that deals with that. But if everything is with, it's all done within the borders of one state, it is not interstate commerce, and the federal government cannot regulate it. Unless, of course, there's things such as explosives involved. Short of that, no. They don't regulate it. Or they try to sometimes, but by law, by authority granted to them in the Constitution, they cannot. And of course, we can always change that. We need to get people in office say, okay, yeah, we want to get that change in the Constitution. I have to do a constitutional amendment. Everything go through. Yeah, everything's good. Now, that would be about probably at least a 5-year, 10-year process, I should say. It'd take a long time. And you'd be hard-pressed to find people to do it, but it technically does exist, the ability to change that. When it comes to guns, you have the BATFE, which is Bureaucrats Against True Freedoms, etc. That's what I call them. The Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives is what they call themselves. I call them Bureaucrats Against True Freedoms, etc. What you've got is two different states, state of Montana, state of Tennessee, that have each passed and enacted laws that allow for gun manufacturers in their states to manufacture firearms. For instance, we're just going to stick with Montana for the moment. They've passed a law that would allow gun manufacturers within the state of Montana to manufacture guns, get them to retailers within the state of Montana, who would then sell those guns only to residents of Montana, who would then be required to leave those guns in the state of Montana. No interstate commerce at all. A gun made, sold, and used in the state of Montana. No interstate commerce. Of course, ATF doesn't like that idea. No, can't do it. They sent out a letter to all of the people at federal firearms licenses, and there's several versions of FFLs, as I'll call them, FFLs. You could either be in the retail sales of it, and if you're in retail, there's a couple different versions you could have, you know, to be able to sell just standard firearms, or you get a Class 3 permit to sell full autos and suppressors as well. There's a gun manufacturing license, there's an ammunition manufacturing, there's all kinds of stuff. And actually, the law in Montana, it's not just about guns. It's also about ammunition and accessories. Same thing in Tennessee. If you are in Tennessee, you live in Tennessee, and you make a gun comprise a bunch of ammunition, make any accessories for any guns within the state of Tennessee, to be sold within the state of Tennessee to citizens of Tennessee, residents of Tennessee, that will not take the guns out of the state of Tennessee, they too would be exempt from the federal requirements. Now, the ATF sent out letters to all the different versions of FFL holders in Tennessee and in Montana. It says, nope, that's not the way it is. Federal law supersedes state law. You're going to do what we say. Here's the interesting thing, is if you have a federal firearms license, which was granted to you by the ATF, you have to abide by their rules. They have regulations. They have regulatory authority. Just as good as any law. Just as prosecutable as any law. Which sucks. They call that the illegal fourth branch, unconstitutional fourth branch of the government. Legislative, executive, judicial, then they have the regulatory, or administrative, some people call it. I refer to it as the regulatory. Where, let's say Congress passes a law, and then they assign it to one of their bureaucracies, and then they take and they write rules and regulations around that law. It's any rule or regulation they want to implement, as long as they can cite that it's attached to some law that was passed once upon a time, doesn't supersede the authority of that law, They can write, change, and enforce whatever regulations they want. ATF is famous for that. Famous for that. That's why there's a huge movement to reform the ATF. Back onto the story. What I have professed is if you're in Montana or Tennessee and you want to make or sell any of these guns or ammunition or parts, you need to not already have an FFL or give it up in order to do this. Because if you have an FFL, that means that ATF can come in there and raid your place, do whatever they want at any time. And if you're doing anything that is not within the confines of your federal firearms license, your butt belongs to them. So you'd have to be a gun manufacturer that's a new business, or a business that gives up their FFL. I would suggest it be a new business where you've got people and they have the tooling and they start making guns. And they never bother with the ATF. Never bother with them at all. Because you can't very well be in violation of your license if you don't have one to begin with. And you're going by the way the state law is written. The same would be true for anybody who's going to sell these guns, retail these guns out. It'd have to be a company that does not already have an FFL. So the feds are being sued to keep out of the state's gun affairs in Montana. There's a complaint filed seeking affirmation of the Montana Firearms Freedoms Act. In the second major front on the war over gun rights, it has developed in just days. A lawsuit has been filed against U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder, seeking a court order that the federal government stay out of the way of Montana's management of its own firearms. The action was filed by the Second Amendment Foundation and the Shooting Sports Association in U.S. District Court in Missoula, Montana, to validate the principles and terms of the Montana Firearms Freedoms Act, which took effect on the 1st, October 1st. WorldNet Daily, this comes from WorldNet Daily, previously reported on the precedent-setting move taken over the course of recent months when the 2009 Montana legislature approved the bill and the plan was signed into law by Montana Governor Brian Schweitzer. The law provides guns and ammo made, sold, and used in Montana would not require any federal forms. Silencers made and sold in Montana would be fully legal and not registered. And there would be no firearms registration, serial numbers, criminal records checks, waiting periods, or paperwork required. The idea is spreading quickly. Tennessee already has a similar law and similar plans to be introduced in other states. The move comes at a time that the nation has a president who has placed anti-gun activists in several influential positions, including an attorney general who supported a complete handgun ban in the District of Columbia before the U.S. Supreme Court threw it out. Montana's plan is called an act exempting from federal regulation under the Commerce Clause of the Constitution of the United States as firearm, a firearm accessory, or ammunition manufactured and retained in Montana. That is a quote. The law cites that the 10th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution that guarantees to the states, all their people, all powers not granted to the federal government elsewhere in the Constitution, and reserves to the states and to the state and people of Montana certain powers as they were understood at the time it was admitted to statehood in 1889. The guarantee of those powers is a matter of contract between the state and people of Montana and the United States. As of the time that the compact that the United States was agreed upon and adopted by Montana with the United States in 1889, is what is stated in the law. The lead attorney for the plaintiff's litigation team is Quentin Rhodes of the Missoula firm of Sullivan, Tarbacki, and Rhodes. The team includes other attorneys working in Montana, New York, Florida, Arizona, and Washington. We're happy to join this lawsuit, said Alan Gottlieb, founder of Second Amendment Foundation, quote, because we believe this issue should be decided by the courts. We feel very strongly that the federal government has gone way too far in attempting to regulate a lot of activity that occurs only in state, added MSSA President Gary Marbut. That's the Missouri Shooting Sports Association. The Montana legislature and governor agreed with us by enacting the Montana Firearms Freedoms Act. We welcome the support of many other states that are stepping up to the plate with their own Firearms Freedom Acts. David Codera, a Gun Rights Examiner writer, noted that the federal government already has started attacking the move. The Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, he wrote, previously had written to federal firearms licensees warning that they would be prosecuted for following the state's laws in Montana and Tennessee. What if an FFL was not acting in his capacity as a federal firearms licensee to manufacture for personal use or to transfer firearms strictly within a state? Or what if a person so engaged was not a federal firearms licensee at all? Codora asked. Then he answered, ATF's determined intent to hold all accountable under federal law has not wavered. In a letter to MSSA President Gary Marbot, Richard Chase, Special Agent in Charge of the Denver Field Division at the ATF, states, the manufacture of firearms or ammunition for sale to others within Montana requires licensure by ATF. In a statement, the Second Amendment Foundation said the following. The primary purpose of the MFFA is to set up a legal challenge to federal power under the Commerce Clause. The lawsuit seeks a declaratory judgment and is brought for the purpose of determining a question of actual controversy between the parties. Passage of the MFFA was an express exercise by the state of Montana of powers reserved to the states and to the people under the 10th Amendment of the United States Constitution, according to the lawsuit. The MFFA is also authorized under the conditions of the compact with the United States that Montana entered upon admission into the Union. The United States Congress, therefore, has no authority under the limited powers guaranteed to it by the United States Constitution to preempt the MFFA. The arguments continued. Under the 10th Amendment, all regulatory authority of all such activities within Montana's political borders is left to the sole discretion of Montana. Federal law, therefore, does not preempt MFFA and cannot be invoked to regulate or prosecute Montana citizens acting in compliance with the MFFA, so long as they do solely within the political borders of Montana. So there you go. I think one of the ways to really put this into effort is to get constitutional sheriffs within the state of Montana to actually let the ATF and the feds know you will not be allowed in my county to do any of this garbage that you seem to think you're going to be allowed to do. If you have constitutional sheriffs stand up and say, nope, not in my county, because they are the most powerful law enforcement officer in a county, it's an elected sheriff. And if they put any of these federal groups on notice, nope, not in my county, not without my permission. They have the legal authority to do that. So you'd have to get all the sheriffs within Montana to agree, or maybe you wouldn't be allowed to participate in making guns, ammo, accessories, or buying any of these within that county. You could, however, go to another county and buy it and bring it back, I would think. But then the purchaser themselves, the people actually, the retail customer, that would be the last person anybody should bother looking at. They're following the law that's within the state. You have to start at the top and work your way down when it comes to enforcement of these things. Not start at the bottom and work your way up. It's interesting because there are these two states that have passed the laws, Montana and Tennessee. There's about a dozen others that have introduced this legislation. There's probably about 15 to 20 others that are closely monitoring what's happening in Montana and Tennessee with the thoughts of potentially introducing this. And then there's about a dozen or so that haven't done anything. I live in Nevada, one of the states that hasn't done anything. Utah is one of the states. Now, Utah is very, very progressive. I hate to use the word progressive because it's generally used in a socialist format. A progressive is generally somebody that is a socialist-leaning Democrat all the way towards Marxist. But Utah is progressive in their staunchness for upholding gun rights. They are looking at what's going to happen in Montana and Tennessee to decide whether or not they are going to look at passing similar legislation in Utah. All that'll be wonderful if they do. I lived in Utah for a year as a contractor for Department of Defense. So I was a resident of Utah. And excellent gun laws. Very, very free when it comes to the gun laws. Their concealed weapons permits are all handled on a state level. You don't have to go to your police chief, your county sheriff. You don't have to ask permission. It's all handled at the state level. You find yourself an authorized concealed weapons instructor who are trained. They have to go through a class in one of a couple places within the state. And then when you're done with your application, you send your application, you send the fees, photos, all that good stuff to the state office. The state office reviews everything, does a background check on you. Then the state office will send you your permit, your five-year permit. That's the way it works in the state of Utah. You don't have to go through any state any city or county law enforcement official or office. It's great. It's really kind of the way things should be. They actually have a division set up just for it, and the fees essentially pay those people, so it doesn't operate at a loss. Good way of doing things. Stay tuned. There's more after the break. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, right here on 2A Radio.
Your right to listen and take action shall not be infringed. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443.
So next week is the big week where I won't be doing a show. I will be at Disneyland with my daughter who just turned 10 for her 10th birthday. I've mentioned it before that when each of my kids turns 10, they get to spend a week at Disneyland, just them and Daddy, just the two of us. That is our 10th birthday bonding time. Go have a great time. And I get them the cool little, if you've ever been to Disneyland, there's Disneyland and California Adventure Park. There is you can buy a memorial brick. It's like $150, and they guarantee it stays there for at least 10 years. And I get them the brick. They put it in. We go on a tour, do all the fun stuff, the birthday party thing with, Mickey and Minnie or whatever it is. Just a whole thing. Just an unforgettable, absolutely rocking week. Next week is that week, which it's going to be kind of cool. My daughter's birthday was actually almost 2 weeks ago. Tomorrow will be 2 weeks ago. But she has next week off of school for whatever reason. And next week actually happens to be my birthday. So it's going to be a lot of fun. She turns 10, I turn 40. It's all great. So with that being said, I'm trying to brew up some things for next week for the show. I am going to probably put together a couple of best of shows. I am trying to my best to get a couple of different guest hosts to host a show here or there sometime next week. So I'm not exactly sure yet what next week will hold, but I am trying to have some pleasant surprises for you so that you can enjoy next week without it having to be, just a complete repeat of shows. Some best ofs are good. If I'm able to find the time, because there's a lot to do between now and next week with a number of things. I have my fingers in so many pies, it's ridiculous. And I have a lot of stuff to shore up so I can go on this trip next week. And one of the things I do not do is I do not take my cell phone with me to the park. I'll leave it in the hotel, or if I take it with me, it's simply to be able to use the camera and video functions on my BlackBerry. But I actually turn the service off because that would interrupt the whole thing when it comes to me and my daughter. So I'm going to do my best to have, I'm working diligently this week to try and shore up a couple of guest hosts here and there, maybe one day, one another day, some best ofs. If I get a chance to pre-record a show, maybe throw that in there. So next, I am thinking of you guys when it comes to next week. I mean, I'd be happy just to go to the park, go with my daughter, and have everybody listen to reruns, but I don't think you guys would be happy listening to reruns for a solid week. You're the listening audience. I'm here for you guys, trying to impart my knowledge, certainly information, news and events on the Second Amendment, Tenth Amendment, Fourth and Fifth Amendments, things like that, and really trying to keep everybody informed, up to date, and if nothing else, somewhat entertained. So I'm working for you for next week, all right? I just want everybody to know. Next week, if you have comments to email, feel free to send them. I'm probably not going to be getting back to anybody for at least a little while, just so you know. I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you in Congress, the executive, and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule. Thank you for spending your morning with me. I'll be back tomorrow.
Bill will be here tomorrow. Will your freedoms? The Two-Way Radio Show, 7 a.m. Pacific, 9 Central, Monday through Friday.